Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, 96.3 HD2, and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Pardons in the state of Maryland regarding cannabis convictions. Angela Alsobrooks, target of racist attacks and threats in her quest for the U.S. Senate seat in Maryland. President Biden, executive orders, and immigration, just some of the stories we are highlighting, making the headlines so far this week. Joining us at the Reporters Roundtable to further this conversation is Nikki Mayo. She's the editor-at-large of Black Women Unmuted. William Ford, he's a reporter for Maryland Matters. And Reese Colbert, host of the Reese Colbert Report on Sirius XM. Folks, as usual, thank you all for being with us and to share your expertise. Mr. Ford, I could go ladies first, but because there's two, I don't want to sort of, you know, pick one over the other. I'm going to start with you, William Ford, and you got your glasses on today, so you're looking all studious and you're ready to talk about these pardons there in Annapolis. This is a big deal. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. This is a big deal. It's been talked about for a while when we're talking about low-level drug offenses nationwide. What can be done to reverse some of this? What's your take on what the governor did this week, Will, with basically pardoning over 175,000 convictions for low-level possession of marijuana?
Well, when you talk to some of the lawmakers, you talk to some of the advocates, they're ecstatic for the simple fact that you have this minor conviction. And by the way, which is legal now for both medical and recreational use. Let's get that there. That they can put have a check mark put in that their pardon for this conviction is huge. Some people couldn't even get, let's say, student loans. Couldn't even rent an apartment. Now, I have to put things in perspective here because there's a caveat. A person who is pardoned, they must apply to the courts to have their records expunged. They have to, because the
meaning that those records aren't—they're not automatically expunged, correct?
That's correct.
By this order.
That's okay. Correct. That's correct. So somebody, if they wanted to do a deep check, they'll still find this individual's record there, but it'll have pardon near it. And by having to go to get an expunge, you got to go to the courts, and who knows if a judge will say yay or nay. You just got to, some people would have to literally trust the legal system to be able to say, hey, we can't get it. You'd be able to get this expunged. And one more little point. Individuals who may not have read any of the media reports or heard on the radio or may not catch WHUR right now, they're going to have to find out for themselves, go online to what's called case search, or they can find trusted voices. I know of a couple of individuals, Life After Release, helps with those returning citizens. That's run by Kiana Johnson, based out of Prince George's County. You have Alpha Justice, that's in Baltimore, led by Nicole Hanson Mundell. So there's ways you can find out, but the state didn't give out, let's say, they're sending out a flyer. They're sending you an email. They're calling you. No, people want to find out on their own. And that extra step is expungement.
Nikki, I think the expungement part is big. Right. Because it still stays there on a background check. If you're applying for a job, it's still going to be there. And so then the question becomes, OK, if a potential employer sees that and they see pardon next to it, does it really mean much just because it says pardon, but it's not expunged, as Will says, unless you then go through the process to have it expunged? So where I'm going with this is that it does look great, right? Mm-hmm. But theoretically, if you don't have it expunged, is it doing much?
Okay. So it does put a lot of onus on the individual. And by the way, thank you, Bramante and Candace, for having me on Daily Drum today. Think about it this way. You probably already have an uncomfortable relationship with law enforcement and with the judicial system already. And when you look at how many people are already impacted by, like, the number is stifling. You're talking about the number of people that could probably fill up M&T Stadium like twice. That's a lot of people. they probably don't feel as confident to go through the whole expungement process. And even if they did, it's like, do they have the time to? Who are these people? How have their lives already been previously impacted by the fact that they were deemed persona non grata in an illegal activity? There are so many people that once you have that brush up, and let's be straight, there's a lot of teenagers and juvenile people involved in this, I'm sorry, that they probably don't have a good relationship with navigating judicial systems, even if it's as simple as doing a web search, okay? Right. And then you're looking at employers who, we are in a transitional period right now, so it's weird that those who can hire you might still have questionable views toward those who may have either distributed or got caught with, or whatever the possible charge was that, you know, is leading to this conviction. I feel like a lot of people may not go forward on it. They might have to lean on public programs that are dedicated to, like, let us help you get this expunged. And also let us give you the talking points on how to engage potential employers so that you're not left out there trying to explain away like a nickel bag or a dime bag of weed or something to that effect. And it's just I hope we get to the hypocrisy of all this, because the hypocrisy of all this is that there are medicinal places popping up left and right. People are getting licenses and getting the blessing of the state left and right to sell this stuff. The amount of people who are hyper policed on this, and as I sit here with, you know, my hometown of Baltimore on one side and Prince George on the other side, just think about it real quick. Like, I mean, for your people who are listening and not seeing this, but I hold these two places very near and dear to myself. But when you talk about convictions by county, Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Prince George's County, all of them have more than 20,000 like convictions that are looking for weed. Like, this is for weed. And not to, like, you know, I'm going to step off my little, you know, soapbox here. But real talk, my parents were boomers. And that means they were rolling around in the 70s. And we've all saw how nostalgic, like, Woodstock and just getting high. We saw the 70s show. So a lot of folks who put this legislation out there were high as a kite back in the 70s. It's going to say it that way. It's long time come. I feel like those who need to get this stuff expunged, if they don't do it independently, I'm hoping that these organizations that are dedicated to second chances and, frankly, to just living normal, because, again, it was weed. I hope that they are going to reach out.
Yeah. Speaking for someone who is on the last year of the boomer totem, okay? So let me just admit that. You can do the math. But what's the other one? What comes after boomer? I always forget. What are you all?
Ooh, don't do that to them. That's Gen X. They always feel like they're looked over. Don't do that.
Is that, well, yes. Wait a minute. No, the Gen X is after boomer. No, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, I can never keep up. But it's anyway,
a weird child complex that goes on there. It's boomer, Gen X, and then millennial, and then Gen Z.
Okay, right. So I'm sounding like somebody standing on the lawn behind a white picket fence. But anyway, Reese Colbert. You go ahead and then I'm going to ask you something. Go ahead, Reese.
Okay. To your point, Nikki, obviously these laws criminalizing marijuana possession were put there as a pretext to overpolice Black communities. That's why we're seeing that disproportionately the pardons are impacting Baltimore City and Baltimore County and Prince George's County. These are the Blackest areas of the state. However, on the issue of expungement, I do want to point out that the governor used what is solely within his power, which is pardoning power. That rests solely with the governor. And he was able to take this really historic step in a state that is disproportionately Black. I mean, we've seen in other states where they've done this, but there's a much smaller proportion of the population that is Black. So to do this in a Black state in an election cycle where, even though he's not on the ballot, is all about crime, and him not being afraid to make the case that our statistics are better, but we also have to tackle this quality of life issue for people who have been unjustly convicted of something that is now legal. I think that's really bold. But I want to make the point here where I think the advocacy has to shift to the legislature. The legislature has the ability to have some rules around expungement in this case in particular, or to expand expungement and making it easier. I've had the CEO of the Clean Slate Initiative on my program multiple times, Sheena Mead, who is doing this, and her organization with others are doing this in states across the country, successfully allowing the successfully getting the states to shift the onus from those who want their record expunged to the states who obviously have the infrastructure and make it a lot less onerous process. So I'm hoping that along with what Governor Moore has done, the very Democratic Maryland legislature will also take some steps to help, you know, make this even better. But they are, I will say, the Moore administration, they're trying to make amendments or rules with their own agency and kind of suppressing this information after a certain number of years and background checks. So there's still more work to be done. But I think this alone in of itself certainly makes it that much easier for people to, you know, move forward with life despite having these convictions. Well, not pardons.
A couple of things you hit, Reese, and I will say that really caught my attention about this announcement, just even the optics of watching it, right? Number one, I haven't heard a whole lot of pushback on his order. Now, it may be out there, but I haven't heard a whole lot about it. Number two, Will, you said something about this, but, you know, there was clapping in the background when he made that announcement at the State House. You could hear it in the audio and you could see it, right? And number three, I got to tell you, the blackness of the statements from Moore, from Anthony Brown, especially Anthony Brown, because he kind of messed up in that original when he was running for governor. He seemed like he was sort of running from that, but that's just me. They were coming straight saying, like, this is an issue, as all of you have said, to rectify problems that really overarchingly affected Black and Brown people. So, Will, I was really struck by that, how they didn't really hold back from that. They said, this is what this is doing. I mean, Moore said, look, this is trying to rectify some social and economic injustices that have come down on Black people. I mean, he was being real Black.
Well, when you are able to lead in a state where folks look at Maryland as very progressive, but when you go deep, deep, deep into it, it's moderate as all get out. It just is. Let's just keep it real. It is. It is.
Nikki, are you sure? I saw you look. I saw that, Nikki. Is that moderate? I mean to cut you, Will, but Nikki kind of looked to the left like, that didn't like an agreement look.
Yeah, I mean, the state loves to say it's progressive. I think we're progressive in speech, but are we progressive in policy, okay? That's where we get stuck, because I don't think that everything that comes through the state house is screaming, ooh, progressive. He's right. I was kind of like, like moderate, yes, he's right.
Progressive, yeah, well, no.
That's the point. That's the point. I mean, you get there's individuals who come there almost on a daily basis during the 90-day session, and they're saying lawmakers, look, we have your support, but you got to pass some laws here that mean something, that have teeth. What she said about the expungement is a big one. And this, I think the legislature can do that, but I have heard and I've seen, but there's been testimony from judges. They
only because we got about a minute before we go to break. Okay. But Reese, I know you have said you interviewed the governor recently, right?
Yes, today.
And today, in about a minute, did he say anything about this expungement, about him not having the authority to do it, but it's going to be an issue that he's going to push? You got about 30 seconds.
Ask him, but I will be certain the next time I get to follow up with him to ask him that.
Okay, Reese. Well, we're waiting for you to break news here. I'm going to come back and ask you some more about the governor. See, we can use you to break news on WHUR. That's what we do here sometimes, right? Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You can hear, remember, every edition of the Insight segment via podcast. All you have to do is download the WHUR app and hear it on your smartphone, this entire show. Don't forget that you can do that. Or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app again on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. This conversation continues online and on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. The original Quiet Storm is next on 96.3 WHUR. Stay with us. This conversation is going to continue. We're going to talk about what's happening with the Angela Alsobrooks U.S. Senate race and something that's going on with one of the campaign signs for Alsobrooks and plenty more. It's the Reporters Roundtable. We'll continue on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 in just a moment. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM channel 141, 96.3 HD2. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Reporters Roundtable. We're talking about some of the stories that have been highlighted so far this week. One of those, Nikki Mayo, Angela Alsobrooks, Larry Hogan running for U.S. Senate. Angela Alsobrooks has signs up. She's the current county executive in Prince George's County. We find one of her signs has been defaced with a crosshair symbol, which usually means it's a target that was on her forehead, and KKK written down on along her name. This sign wasn't found in some far-reaching back ends of the state where she may not be very popular. It's marked in Laurel, Prince George's County, her jurisdiction. What say you about this? Big deal, little deal, no deal?
Oh, it's a big deal. It's a threat. It's definitely something to be worried about. I did, by the way, question what part of Laurel did it fall in? Because, you know, Laurel crosses three different counties. So,
yes, that's
you know, a piece of me was like, did it fall good in point. The county side?
Was Laurel Bowie Road, I don't, does it go beyond Prince George's? I used to live
in it was in Prince George's. It was in
Prince George's part. So that
it
is.
It was.
Yeah, that's because, concerning. Okay. Yeah.
Because the Prince George's County Police are investigating.
Correct. That's true.
Okay. There you go. Well, yeah, I saw it in passing and I was like, oh, that's not good. Primarily because, let's be straight, when it comes to normally a social media harassment, okay? Like that's what we're kind of used to. We're not used to the old fashioned, let me go ahead and like, you know, deface your property, put some type of slurs, or in this case, I think it had KKK and the crosshairs right on her face and whatnot. That it's indicative of what Black women in particular are facing when it comes to being in the political eye, mobilizing anything. There is a whole report out there by the Brenham Center that talks about women are three to four times as likely as men to experience being targeted because of their gender. And, you know, there's swatting, there's threats of abuse. There's, you know, going to my TikTok speech here, there's threats of rape, you know, of doing sexual assault and stuff like that. Unfortunately, that has become, it's like the social media gremlins have reemerged back to old timey tactics. So no, it's a big freaking deal. Seriously, I hope that they have security and everything ready. It's one of those things that makes me very saddened because I teach college students and I'm constantly trying to tell them that a lot of gender related stuff is still here, a lot of age related stuff is still here, and that people will feel the audacity to infringe upon you, to threaten you, because they've always been taught that they could always hurt you. I'm scared for this whole situation. And to give you an idea about degrees of abuse, according to the Brenham Center, there was like four: insults, harassment, threats, and physical attacks. You really hope that it stops at words, but you never know when someone's going to act on those words. And if January 6th has told us or showed us anything, there's always somebody wacky enough to go out and do the most extreme.
Well, her spokesperson, Gina Ford, said they are concerned about her safety, but they will not let, you know, this act deter her campaign from moving forward. What do you think about this, Reese? How do you see it and through what prism? Is it race? Is it gender? Is it something
else? It's definitely both, but it's also about power. It's about white power more specifically. I mean, this is the election cycle is really about the white nationalist last stand. So I think that the KKK, you know, wording being on there is very deliberate. It's not just as much as about disliking Black people. It's about institutionalizing white power. And although I wouldn't put Larry Hogan along the likes of a Donald Trump, the reality is that Larry Hogan in that seat as a senator hands the majority to the Republican Party, which will then enact that white nationalist agenda. So I think that maybe what that's signaling to the people that identify with that is she's an enemy to that. Whether you like Larry Hogan or not, she's definitely not on our side with that. But what I hope it signals to Black people and people of conscience who don't want to support that kind of ideology is that she is the person that's going to stand up against that. And that's what's at stake here is our humanity and having somebody who's going to defend that. So I hope that whatever complacency people have around this election cycle, around Biden being old, or maybe the perception that we are a reliably blue state, I hope that this wakes them up to understand the zeal and the kind of emotion that is on the opposition, and that we turn out equally, if not actually more, than they're going to be turning out against us.
That's an interesting point too, Will, that, you know, it can work both ways. You know, this may, the Also Brooks campaign could use this to say, hey, listen, this is why it is important for our voters, however you deem those hours to be, right, to get out there to combat this kind of thing. You know, Larry Hogan is running ads saying, hey, I'm not beholden to the Republican Party. I'm going to vote my conscience. He obviously knows that he could be tied to Trump. And he did issue a statement regarding this campaign sign saying, quote, hate, threats of violence and racism must be condemned in the strongest possible terms. They have no place in Maryland. But do you see this as an opportunity maybe for Also Brooks to say, hey, look, what Reese has said, this is kind of what we're up against. So if you think you can be complacent and not go to the polls, this is why we need your vote. I mean, I might have just wrote a campaign ad for them, but is that what she needs to do?
Definitely.
Well, that's going to be one thing besides talking about abortion, talking about some of the vetoes that former Governor Hogan has done. This could be just another example the campaign could use. I'm glad you brought up, Ramonte, about what former Governor Hogan did put out there when it was noted, because his family, I think it was his father, did business in Prince George's County. So he does have ties to the county.
Former county executive, his father. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. But going back into the Senate race, it's going to be a long summer. Let me tell you that right now. And what a lot of times, and I don't mean to name drop, but there's a gentleman named Todd Eberle. He's the professor at St. Mary's College. And he mentioned, pay attention. Certain fundraisers usually are done during the summer. But then you got little nuggets like this that pop up, and then you got to see which campaign is going to be strong enough to stand up and just step forward and speak truth to power, so to speak, or wither and die like flowers, period. Labor Day, when folks get their children ready for the school year, when they're getting some of their schedules set, it's going to be fast and furious. Stay tuned with that. That's for sure.
Do you all think Also Brooks will lean into the black vote with this? Or is it better for her not to go there and just kind of leave this alone and let it pass?
It feels like it's automatic. Like, I don't think you have to lean into this and show people, like, look at what happened. I think the black vote was automatic when we saw in the primary. Like, they were doing line dances at her victory party. I mean, like,
but more turnout though, Nikki, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Because there's an issue just in the general election. Biden is worried about, you know, black turnout. Anthony Brown ran for governor, didn't really have a lot of the black turnout. Now she's running a national campaign. And I'm just wondering, you know, is this something where you can learn from other campaigns to go, you know, you don't want to overuse it, but at the same time, it is what it is. And do you have to say, look, this is what's at stake? I think that's kind of what Reese was getting at.
Will it make a difference, though? Because, I mean, keep in mind, you're talking about Larry Hogan and how he was revered across the state when it comes to being almost like a moderate Republican, not like the extreme MAGA Republican. So I don't know if the race thing is really a selling point. It's kind of like it's automatic. She's black. She's a whole Delta. She's in charge of Prince George's County. I mean, it's like you really can't not be black here. It's obvious there. And what you're competing against is, well, Larry Hogan wasn't that bad. Like, you're competing more
without
against
a doubt.
The feeling of Larry Hogan, if anything.
Yeah, I would totally agree. Yeah, he's not the scary Republican. And I think that's what his ads really are saying, Reese.
Well, he's not. He's actually not the big boogeyman yet, at least. They need to go to work on him to make him that. But I think that the same way that Republicans like to attach Black Lives Matter in some sort of derogatory way, or the, what was it? It's faded now. The defund the police, right?
Right.
They like to, they attach certain crowds, even if they're not necessarily the politicians themselves, with Democratic politicians. I think this campaign should try to, you know, not let a good crisis go to waste and do more of a job of attaching this mindset with Larry Hogan. Maybe not explicitly saying that he supports this, but I think that you have to draw a contrast in terms of the ideologies that you're getting with an Austin Brooks as opposed to a Hogan. And I think that, you know, it you can really galvanize Black people a lot more around the issue of race. She didn't do that in the primaries. She's still mollywop David Trone. So she might make the argument that I didn't have to do that then. I don't have to do it now. But I think we've seen, if you contrast to like a Governor Moore, as you all pointed out earlier, it was a very Black announcement. And so he has leaned in more explicitly on race, racial equity than I've seen also Brooks do. And he was wildly successful in doing it. So I think if she knows how to finesse it, it can be a huge selling point for her. But if you don't know how to finesse it, then maybe you just let it, you know, speak for itself and stay on message with what you feel more comfortable doing.
I'm so mad that when you talk, I'm thinking about that CB4 line, that I'm Black, y'all, and I'm Black.
Yeah.
I swear if the county executive comes out with some type of ad with a koofy on and screaming, I'm Black, y'all, I'm going to come find you, Reese.
I don't think she's going to do that. No. I'm just saying, like, you know, you could, I'm just saying, like, I think that if you ignore race, let's just say that you try to shy away from race, you try to go after the Hogan, you know, diner in rural part of Maryland, that's not her path to winning. Her path to winning the general election is the same way that she, again, mollywopped David Trone, which was through Baltimore, Prince George's County,
and Montgomery County,
and St. Charles. And so it remains to be seen how much she's going to lean in on these kind of racial flare-ups or back away. But I think that the more that she backs away from it, and I'm not saying she is, she's going to have to make up from that somewhere else, because you're not going to get the enthusiasm from the Black vote if you are not leaning in to the issues as they arise.
Reese, where are you from?
Well, I was raised in California, but I've been out here for
so long. No, because you said Wally mopped. That Wally mopped.
Is that a California? That might be California.
It must be something. What was it, Molly or Wally Mop?
It's Molly Wop.
You know, okay.
Ramonte showing his age. That's what that is.
Okay.
Am I showing my age?
Yes, because Molly Wop is a normal phrase. Yes. Like, yes. What's wrong? Okay. I was like, if anything, you know, because she's like, you know, we out here being Black. I was like, are you from the Berkeley area? Because it's giving Berkeley right now. You know, they will torch something up.
Nah, L.A., honey. South Carolina, South L.A. That's
South. Well, my daughter was just in Compton a couple of days ago. Went out there for a concert. She was all excited. She said, oh, Daddy, it was so good. You know, and the music was so good. And I was talking to one of my friends. And I was like, oh, I got to come back. He was from Compton. He said, all right, it was all right. But just remember, some change has been made, but it's still Compton, okay? So get in your Uber and go on back to USC.
Go back to the burbs.
Before we move on, I did have one other question, Will, and I wanted to ask you this about also Brooks. To me, I've noticed in her campaign, I mentioned what Hogan is doing, that he's trying to get that soft, moderate, what everybody has said, you know, I'm not going to be beholden to the Republican Party. And those ads are running and running and running, and I haven't seen a whole lot from the county executive. Now, she didn't run a whole lot even in the primary until the very end. And then, you know, she had Steny Hoyer and Van Hollen and a lot of big wigs in those ads. Have you noticed that? And does it matter? Or because it's so early, she needs to hold on to that funding, you know, until later when folks are paying attention beyond the summer months?
It showed when she waited. It worked. Because people remember near the time when to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And see, as I'm going to go back to something I said during the summer months, you're going to have to fundraise. She can use the supporters / surrogates to get a lot of the messages out for. Check my email box almost every other day. Maryland Democratic Party has a message. Anything that Donald Trump may say, Maryland Democratic Party jumping on. Anything that Mitch McConnell may say, and if it tilts something to Maryland, Democratic Party jumping on it. So she may not have to say a word. She has plenty of surrogates in the federal, state, local elected officials who have the resources. And when those resources, they bring other people who follow them. So it's usually one out of 10 people who follow them. That just one times 10 is 100, then just keep adding and multiplying. So, and Nikki's made a great point in terms of race. I mean, she's Black. Just look at her. I mean, she's running the majority black jurisdiction, one of the biggest, not in the state, but the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, that day alone says, literally says quite a bit. And she's making history just by her winning a primary. Yeah. That stands alone right there. And as a black woman winning a primary, there's going to be folks looking at her even more so. Just because she's a black woman and a single black woman raising a daughter who just finished her freshman year at Spelman. Add that to the list of, oh, she does get it. Yeah. Folks who got to look out for tuition, who are just who get their calls from their children, say, hey, how you doing, mommy? I'm fine. Are you okay? She can. That's something she can literally bring. And she has talked openly about the relationship she has with her daughter. Very open about that. I've looked at the faces and the people in the crowd. They connect on that hard, big time. So she really doesn't have to do a whole lot, not at this point. I mean, Maryland Democratic Party is right there doing it for her. And one other person who did not say much during the primary and is now is the gentleman who they seek it, who her and former Governor Hogan seeking to replace. That's Ben Cardin. He was with her yesterday in a Jewish section in, oh my goodness, I forgot, in Pikesville, that's where it was. My colleague Josh Kurtz had went there to follow. It was talking with some Jewish voters. So you see what I'm saying about race? You know what I'm saying? And matter of fact, Larry Hogan won that particular area when he was governor. So you see the strategy going on there?
But can I just add one thing, though? Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. to your point about the advertising, about the fundraising, this kind of issue provides a little bit of opportunity for some, first of all, free press, a little bit of theater. You can mm-hmm. get out there and say, I will not be deterred. You know, I'm a strong black woman and da-da-da. Like, you know, there are people, there are forces against us. I'm just saying you can use it a little bit more as an energizing and galvanizing factor because black right. people don't like the idea of racial violence, of being intimidated. So I'm not saying that she has to go full Angela Davis on it, but I'm saying that there are only so many opportunities that you don't have to pay for, that you can get people's eyeballs on you. And so that's what I mean, that there are opportunities to take advantage of that and dominate a news cycle and drive the conversation a little bit more towards you and kind of put Larry Hogan more on the defense. Right now, if nothing else is done, he's released a statement and this goes away. But did you get a moment out of it? So I think it's fine to not take advantage, but I think it's also a missed opportunity if you don't draw attention to the forces that you're up against and use it as a rallying cry for more enthusiasm earlier on in your campaign.
I gotta say, I would agree with Reese on this one. Okay, Reese, you win that round. Now moving on. No, I'm just kidding. President Biden, immigration, as we all know, it's going to be an issue along with his age. Biden has issued this executive order, right? Now he's going to try to let those who are, I believe, who've come into the country undocumented, but have spouses who are here, who are U.S. citizens, then apply for citizenship at some point. So he's basically easing the path now to citizenship for those who've come into the country illegally. So he is leaning in more to this issue of immigration, right? One, his executive order is getting tougher on the border. This one is kind of playing to that crowd that says, yeah, hey, but what about those who've come in and we have some connections to people who are already here? And this is prior to this debate that's coming up with former President Trump in about 8 or 9 days. So what do we think about this with this issue of immigration? Number one, is it as important as the polls are showing? Is that your feel? And is what Biden is what he's doing? How can he use that? Is it the right move for him as you see this, Nikki Mayo?
It's an election year. It's another shiny mm-hmm. object. So that's where I'm kind of leaning into. If anything that can win you favor against the opponent, in this case, Donald Trump, and we all remember the lovely wall conversation mm-hmm. between mm-hmm. him. And I will never get over him and the Mexican, you know, president talking about their back and forth about this wall situation.
Who's going to pay for it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, who'll pay for it? No, you're going to pay for it. I'm not paying for it.
Yeah. The language was just so, wow. Wow. That's all I have. Like, I never... it was like an SNL sketch we were living through and watching.
Right.
But yeah, immigration on an election year is always going to be a hot button topic. The way that you engage it, the question becomes, is the way that you engage it during the campaigning going to be the same as if you become the, you know, the incumbent, if you become elected again? Because it could all be a lot of talk. And then all of a sudden now we have slow moves to policy. But it's giving hope. It's definitely, it feels like DACA. It really does, even though I always think about the people, because I always think about, well, how do the rich people, how does this affect the rich people? I'm curious. And it does make me think about those who have the mail order passport bros kind of feel to it. Just curious how, you know, how is that going to work out? The anchor babies kind of situation. I mean, these are all horrible things that they really do happen. And this is how people dodge the immigration system. So I feel like it was a great hot button topic. In a couple of months, we'll be in Hispanic Heritage Month. I want to hear this conversation during that month, right? I want to hear it being very honest. And it's not like Hispanic people are the only immigrants, but they're the only ones we seem to be talking about when we get into the immigration conversation. Because we know how it goes for most of the folks out of the Caribbean that happen near you. I would love to see a little bit more on this. So, I got to stop there because, I mean, everything else would just be speculation at this point. But yes, it's one of those, it's a election year. It's another shiny object. Whatever gets us out of Hunter Biden purgatory, I'm happy for it. Okay.
But Will, isn't it a shiny object that the president really, you know, he has to address? He's got to sort of create some demarcation between him and Trump, especially going into a debate. And as Nikki said, especially some of those voters, you know, you have Latino voters who are looking to say, hey, I've got family members who've come in who already have family members here who are legal. So, I mean, yeah, we want to keep the illegals out, but the illegals that came in and have family members here, we're concerned about that. So it's a dicey dance that he has to have. I'm going to be interested when the debates come up, how that's going to be talked about between Trump and Biden. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, if you followed what the Trump playbook does, he just throws a bunch of stuff in the air, whatever lands, I'll go for it. And this is one of those, you could see him targeting those border states, saying, you see what President Biden's doing? He's just letting everyone come to the country. No papers, no anything. They could just come from boats and just swim on over and just take our jobs. He's done it already. You don't think he's going to do that again with this? Oh, there's no doubt. No doubt. But as Nikki said, it is great for those individuals who have family members here. And I think it's 10 years. That's one of the nuggets with it. And those every single year, every single day and month, they've paid taxes. Let's not forget that. Those individuals have contributed to the economy. So you're going to tell somebody, get out. And wait a minute, I've contributed maybe $8,000 in taxes probably in 2 years. You're going to tell me to leave? Then I would like a refund in my taxes. You know that's not happening.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? So yeah, it'll be interesting to hear. But this one, it's kind of written on the wall what's going to happen in the debate, what Trump's going to say, and then Biden's going to have to defend it.
Yeah, you Trump is just going to lie. He's just going to make stuff up. The numbers are all in Biden's favor in terms of the effectiveness of his policy without having to build tents and separate families. But
Reese, the polls keep showing that the majority of voters believe that Trump can handle immigration better than Biden. I mean, he usually tends to lean Republican anyway, right?
Yes.
So what does he have to do? Just kind of just chip at that, because he may not ever really overtake Trump in that category.
Right. I mean, the bottom line is if you're explaining, you're losing. So trying to break down statistics and all that kind of stuff is going to fall on deaf ears. And so this is just a losing issue for Democrats. I'm actually really annoyed that they keep making new headlines and trying to call themselves tackling it. They should be changing the subject away from immigration as much as possible, rather than trying to, as Nikki put it, have these shiny objects that really aren't going to move the needle that much. I mean, but I will say that generally, largely, a path to citizenship is something that a majority of the country supports. And I think what Will mentioned the taxation part, I think that is, if there's any good argument to be made out of this, saying that if you don't want your taxes to go up, let's find a pathway to citizenship so that these folks can pay more taxes. And that way they can pay for our roads being paved and they can pay for this, that, and the other. I think there's a financial argument that would actually really help, because the perception is that, or what the Republicans try to put out there, is these people are taking our jobs. These people are taking economic opportunity away from us. And so they have to find a way to communicate that it's not a zero sum game and actually they're a net plus to our society. That's a very hard case to make. So if you're forced to talk about it, then that you try to make that case. If you're not forced to talk about it, change the subject as fast as humanly possible.
I agree, because do y'all remember last summer with the sanctuary cities conversation? The amount of gymnastics you'll have to do to try to get out of that debate. So imagine that in an election year. It's about to be Chernobyl up in here. It's not going to be good.
Yeah. And this is, can I also add, this is an issue that is impacting Black communities with the way that these Republican governors have been very smart in shipping, and I would say trafficking is actually more accurate, migrants to these Democratic, mostly Black-led cities.
New York City, D.C.,
Chicago,
and kind of creating that tension there in these Democratic strongholds. I think that the administration, if they do anything, they need to get a handle on that. How do you get federal support to these cities so that the residents don't have the perception that something is being taken away from them? That's the most pressing issue that they can do, because I think if there's any way to peel off Black voters, then it's the immigration. And you don't have to peel off 25%. You just have to peel off a little bit here and a little bit there of people who are frustrated with what they perceive as their taxpaying dollars going towards cell phones, shelter and support for migrants.
I want to bring your listeners to the attention of the fact that when that conversation about sanctuary cities starts to like really blow over, there was a lot of focus on Chicago, right? And for me, I was sitting here confused, like all of a sudden I do watch all of the news organizations and everything. So I was watching Fox News. I've never seen as many Black people on Fox News talking about anything. And I'm sitting here like, wow. They were at the block meetings. They were at the community rallies, all this because of Black people on the south side of Chicago. Like, they went in for the jugular. And I'm like, can we really blame Fox News, or can we blame somebody is good? Somebody was very good and very strategic about sending the busloads of folks to a very impoverished Black area and pretty much having these communities implode on one another.
Yep, exactly.
I knew something was up when I'm seeing as many Black people on Fox News. It just didn't seem right.
I think that might be an underreported story. You know, I think there's a broader story basically on what you all are saying, where we could dig a little deeper on that. But because we only have a few minutes left, I did want to talk about this issue, social media. You mentioned cell phones, Reese. The Surgeon General Vivek Murthy basically says, look, hey man, we need warning labels on social media. It is dangerous. It is bad for the mental health of children. Any of us who have kids and who have cell phones and have computers, I don't think he's telling us anything that we really don't know. In our last 2 minutes, this is kind of sort of our speed round. William Ford, warning labels on social media like they did with tobacco. That's what the Surgeon General is saying. Can that realistically be done?
No, it's very simple. No, here's why. Got to have Congress to pass it. You see what Congress looks like right now. There it is. Even though the Surgeon General is making common sense.
They won't pass it because why? Because it's a Biden administration Surgeon General.
No, it's because it's the fact that you have a Congress that is what voters have said is dysfunctional. And anything that may look good toward anyone that comes from the Biden administration do? No.
Reese?
I don't have time to go through it.
I know. We ain't got time for you to go through it. We got your no. Reese?
I would say that they need to focus on ensuring some sort of accountability on the part of the social media makers, because people are drawn in intentionally, and a label is not going to make any difference like it didn't for people smoking cigarettes. Well, maybe a little bit of difference, but not a big enough difference.
And what say you, Nikki?
It's the same thing with the whole, the warning label is there. That does not mean it's going to be adhered to. Does not mean parents have the bandwidth to enforce it, that educators have the ability to take the phones away with all these school shootings. There's so many variables that are keeping you from getting to that clandestine, let's have no phones in the classroom, let's have no social media time until they're 13. The reality is that this is causing a lot of anxiety and depression amongst our kids. And we should be very worried that they're spending 3.5 to 4 the 7 hours a day on social media, taking in all this messaging. So it's there. It's a label. It's a way for the Surgeon General and the United States government to say they did their due diligence.
Well, I will say there's been a couple of jurisdictions in Virginia where they are outlawing having phones in the classroom. They can't even come out of their backpack. I got to say, I like it. I'd like to see whether or not it can actually work. Nikki, if folks want to find you, follow you, how do they do so?
Sure. I'm at Nikki Mayo News everywhere, every social media account, and as well as with Black Women Unmuted, where we're taking the sisters off mute one story at a time.
All righty. And Reese Colbert?
ReeseColbert.com. And I have a board game that's really fun, AmITrippingGame.com.
All right. And Will Ford, I know you don't have a board game, but you got something.
No, I don't. I trip over myself. I try to do that. You can me on Twitter /X at WJF Jabari Will. There you go.
Nikki Mayo, editor-at-large for Black Women Unmuted, William Ford, reporter for Maryland Matters, and Reese Colbert, host of the Reese Colbert Report on SiriusXM. Folks, thank you so much. Always enjoy the conversation and your expertise. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, June 18th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.